Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Christopher Vasey, who is the author of Natural Remedies for Inflammation, a practical guide for 33 natural remedies for asthma, allergies, hay fever, colitis, arthritis, eczema, and many other conditions, the role of omega-3s in inflammatory defense and anti-inflammatory herbs. Dr. Vasey is joining us from Switzerland today, where he is a naturopath specializing in detoxification and rejuvenation, and he has a number of other books, including The Acid Alkaline Diet for Optimal Health, Optimal Detox, The Naturopathic Way, The Water Prescription, and The Whey Prescription, The Detox Mono Diet, and The Healing Power of Fever. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Vasey. I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, hello. Yes, it's a pleasure for me.
So, would you like to give our listening audience a little bit of your background and maybe include a little bit of the role of naturopaths in Europe? I think they may play a little different role than in the U.S.
Yes, well, my background, well, I followed school and then I got interested in naturopathy. So it started because I went to listen to a talk of a naturopath, and I thought that was so interesting. I found a school and started to study. And then I opened a practice and started working in this field. But very soon I started to give courses on naturopathy to everybody who was interested in the subject. And I started to write summaries of my courses, which became the first two books which were printed, published. And that's how I started to be also an author of books on naturopathy. So when I started 35 years ago, naturopaths were very rare. And they were not really well accepted. Everybody thought that strange people eat in a funny way, or say. But now, 30 years later, there are many naturopaths working, and more people are going to naturopath to be healed of different illnesses. It's something which is much better accepted than in the past.
Yeah, I think in Europe, too, there is a lot more emphasis by the average person on more health in a natural way. You know, you've got homeopathy is a lot better accepted by the average person in Europe, as is botanical medicine or, you know, plant-based medicine. Whereas in the U.S., we're still pretty held captive by the prescription drug cartel. And the average person is not, it's really the more educated person in the U.S. that seeks this kind of, you know, health care. Clinic incorporates this kind of health care, and we've been, we've had naturopaths associated with Millennium Healthcare. So, and then we have doctors that are boarded in holistic medicine practicing out of here. So we combine the two. But I would think that Europe is a lot further ahead, both politically and just the common person, you know, the average person is more likely to seek this kind of medicine.
Yeah, I think that's true. But one thing which is lacking in Europe are clinics where people can go and for a week or two and be followed by naturopaths or other things. But otherwise, it's true. The population is well aware that they should be careful with the way they eat and so forth. Yeah.
Now, the subject of inflammation, you know, we're learning that many diseases start with inflammation. Many of the chronic degenerative diseases, such as heart disease, cancer, even diabetes may begin with inflammation. So inflammation is, you know, a basic thing that we need to understand and learn how to avoid. I guess that's probably why you started with inflammation as a subject matter for this book.
Yes. Yeah. Well, inflammation is a defensive reaction triggered by the immune system to get rid or to kill or neutralize attackers, aggressors. Mm-hmm. I mean, microbes or poisons or allergens and so forth, or many other noxious substances. So it's something mm-hmm. positive, it's helpful, but the problem is that it must not last too long, because as it's a fight between the lymphocytes given by the immune system and the microbe, for example, it's a fight, it's a war, so there are many damages which are made around the fight, and many healthy body cells will be destroyed, which is bad, and also it can be quite painful for the person. So an inflammation is a good reaction, beneficial, but it should not last forever. After a few days, it should stop, or a week maybe, it should stop, and things might come into balance again. The problem is that it is not always the case, because some people the infection is not stopped, or the allergens keep coming in the body and so forth, mm-hmm. or their health, the way they they live is not healthy, and there are continuously toxins, aggressive, dangerous substances which come into the body and feeds the inflammation. And that's the bad bit of it. But basically, the reason why inflammation go on too long is because mm-hmm. people have a bad way of living, eating, lack of exercise, and so forth. So too many toxins and poison stay in the body and aggress the cells.
I want to describe something I saw yesterday in surgery that you might find interesting. I had a patient who was lifting something very heavy and had a reaction that was very extreme in terms of chest wall pain. Actually was in the middle of the chest wall, but she developed a cough, and I'm saying this because in your book you're talking about how the body tries to get rid of toxins, and your book allowed me to really understand a lot of her symptoms. She developed a cough, she developed fluid around her lungs, she developed chest wall tenderness, shoulder tenderness, heat, the calorie or the heat. And she actually did respond to antibiotics, so there might have been a little bit of an infection there, but the infection wasn't the main thing. Now, when I tell you what I found in surgery yesterday, you'll understand why she had all of this. What I found was a ruptured silicone implant. This accident occurred in January, the end of January, and now we're at the beginning of, almost the beginning of March. She had a ruptured silicone implant that was horribly bloody. I mean, we're talking, it took four times as long to get hemostasis on that side as the other side. The other side, I think, was leaking, but the implant wasn't ruptured. And the capsule, or the scar capsule around that implant, looked totally different than the one that was ruptured. So basically what we had was probably the rupture occurred right when she lifted this thing. And then we had this massive, massive inflammatory reaction, which was really almost systemic. And we know that there's a lot of really noxious chemicals that get released when these implants rupture, as well as the silicone itself, which gets eaten by the macrophages, and then they break down and release all these cytokines, or the inflammatory intermediates, so the chest wall inflames. But, oh my God, it was a real struggle to decrease the bleeding. Everything was bleeding. It wasn't major vessels. It was just the inflammatory on that side of the chest wall was really incredible. So I'm telling you that we saw it in surgery yesterday, what happens when noxious chemicals get released to the body.
Yeah. And when we imagine that the body would not react, then all those noxious substances would go everywhere in the body and intoxicate
it. Cause cancer.
that's why the body fights against it straight away.
Right.
And therefore the inflammation.
So basically, some of the things that you were talking about in terms of toxins are interesting. You talked about uric acid and is it pyruvic acid? These breakdown products. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Because I didn't realize that they were so common as noxious substances that our body has to get rid of.
Well, that's a basic idea in naturopathy, in natural medicine, that if we get ill, it is because there are too many substances, toxins in our blood, in the cellular serums, fluids, and so forth. And these toxins are things like acid uric and so forth, which are produced by the body. But what we also put under the same name of toxins is also poisons which come in the body with the food, like food additive or products which are used on the insecticide and so forth. And all these substances will accumulate in the body, around the cells, and then not let the body function correctly. Normally, the body is equipped to get rid of all the toxins and poisons. There are five excretory organs which are have to deal with them, and that is the liver, the intestines, the kidneys, the skin, and the lungs. They are made to take the toxins out of the blood, out of the body, and eliminate them out of the body. But when there are many, many toxins coming in, then they can't do it anymore. And toxins accumulate first in the blood, and then they push down into the around the cells, and then inside the cells. And there they will take place and will put things in imbalance. Or when they are very aggressive, they will address the tissues or the cells. So basically, an inflammation is more something which is triggered by something coming out of the body, like a bee sting or the microbes and so forth. But there can be, in addition to that, a latent terrain which is full of toxins and which is also aggressive. So that increases the tendency to have an inflammation. You mentioned heart problems and diabetes and so forth. In diabetes, there's too much sugar around, not at the correct place. That's aggressive for the body. In the heart problems, the blood has too many toxins, which are always circulating and irritating the blood vessels and giving an inflammation. So inflammation can come from external sources, but the toxins we accumulate can increase this tendency to have inflammations.
I've had a number of patients that were dealing with chemicals in enclosed spaces that shouldn't have been, and of course they're breathing the chemical in and maybe also absorbing it through their skin, and they end up with vasculitis or an arteritis type thing that can actually manifest into a TIA or a stroke or stroke-like symptom. And or even chest pain. It can even affect the coronaries. So chemicals that are toxic can easily affect the blood vessels. And what's interesting is regular doctors don't know much about this at all. They misdiagnose it all the time. It really is a toxic chemical problem. And what we do here at Millennium is we use the foot baths, especially the hydrophobic chemical, to get the hydrophobic chemicals out. We use electrolysis foot bath, and then these symptoms rapidly go away because these are usually hydrophobic chemicals that are being breathed in rather than hydrophilic chemicals that would be more likely to come in through the digestion. But it's almost an emergency. You have to get this stuff out very quickly. And one patient had it with chlorine. She was using Clorox to clean a room, and there was just too much Clorox in the room. And so that led to, a arteritis situation. So people need to be very careful with toxic chemicals. They need to read the instructions, and if it says don't use an enclosed space, really don't do that. You could have a stroke.
Yeah. It's typical of our time to have so many chemicals around, and the chemical pollution is so strong, big.
Yeah.
And the problem is that the body is not necessarily used or prepared to fight against some of these chemicals, because in the past he never came across them. So the immune system has to build a defense specifically against these, and this takes a bit of time and so forth. It's not so effective as for other substances the immune system knows about.
And one of the things that can create quite a significant reaction is an allergen. Is it something you're having an allergic reaction to? Or especially like asthma or something that you're inhaling that you're having a more of a systemic reaction. You talked about angioedema in your book, you know, where you get this swelling. The body can react against an allergen that is like an extreme reaction, and because the immune system's out of whack, and essentially create a life-threatening condition just from something that shouldn't be that bad for the body.
Yeah.
And we see this in the silicone patients. We see it quite a bit, that the silicone chemicals have created such a problem with the immune system that they're getting these angioedema reactions. And sometimes they don't even know to what. I mean, it might be the chemicals that are in their body, but we don't know.
Yeah. That's why more and more people turn to natural medicine, that is healing the body and dealing with the body only with natural things, not with silicone and so forth, and get because when we don't know all about these things and it can be dangerous, we usually scientists say no, it's not dangerous, we've tested it, but after a few years we discover that it is dangerous, it's better not to. And that's why I think there's this big movement of people coming, going back to nature and living and healing themselves in a healthier way.
So
and one way of doing it is also to use anti-inflammatory remedies, which are not chemicals produced in laboratories, but which come from plants, herbs, because they are very effective. And that's why I wrote the book, Natural Remedies for Inflammation, because to tell the people you're not compelled only to use cortisone and aspirins. There are many different plants which can be used.
And the plants are a lot safer. They have a lot less, like aspirin has GI side effects, bleeding side effects, whereas the plant, it doesn't have those intense side effects.
No, plants don't have those side effects, and that's why it's possible to take good quantities of them and not suffer from those bad effects which can come sometimes with aspirin or cortisone. Of course, when the person is in a very dangerous position and all, maybe the plants will not be strong enough to fight the inflammation. And for the beginning, they should use anti-inflammatory given by the doctors. But for most people, many people could use herbs instead of chemicals to fight against their inflammations.
So in the book, you have different categories of anti-inflammatories. Like, for example, you have the herbs that are naturally anti-inflammatory that even some of the drugs are based on. And then you have, the omega oils. And then I didn't realize that evening primrose oil was totally different mechanism than the omega-3 oils. It was interesting to read that.
Yeah.
A lot of the patients prefer that.
Yeah. Well, the plants I present in my books are divided in three big groups. One are plants which act like cortisone. They are called cortisone-like plant herbs. And because cortisone is a substance which will block the, when a cell is aggressed, attacked by something, it will secrete mediators to tell the rest of the body to come to help and to defend it. And they will secrete pro-inflammatory prostaglandins. And that's what is necessary to trigger the reaction of inflammation reaction. But as we've seen, it should not last too long, or if the person has a lot of pain, it's good to be able to calm these things down. And cortisone and the plants I'm going to mention have this effect. They have substances which block the pro-inflammatory prostaglandins. And among these plants are black currant buds, not the leaves, which are usually used for different things, but the buds of black currant in a mother tincture, for example, are very effective because they will stimulate our suprarenal glands to produce cortisone. Because, as you know, cortisone is something we produce, our body produces, but can also be taken in medicine from a laboratory. But when we take the plant, it will stimulate gently but strongly the body to produce cortisone. But the dose the body will receive will never be an overdose because it's produced by the body itself. So, of course, it's not as powerful as taking a few pills of cortisone, but it's very effective, nevertheless, and it can calm. For example, it can also have an effect very quickly. If someone has hay fever, he's sneezing all the time, his eyes are crying and so forth, he takes the drops, and 10 minutes later, it starts to calm down, and 20 minutes later, it can be over for a certain time, of course, because he needs to take more drops later on if he wants to maintain the effect. But it's just to show that it's really something which acts quite quickly. So in the same group of cortisone-like herbs, we have black spruce and Scotch pine. We have the same kind of effect. But there's a second group where there are other kinds of anti-inflammatory plants. They don't act on the suprarenal gland. They don't bring cortisone or help to produce cortisone, but they have substances which block the pro-inflammatory prostaglandins. And that's the plants in this group are usually well known. For example, the devil's claw or Arpagophytum, which is a root from a plant usually found in America, in Africa, and it's very effective against joint problems, pains, and so forth. And in different studies which have been carried out, they've seen that it is just as effective as different chemical medicine doctors give. So it's good news because it has no side effects. It can be taken a long time for people with joint problems, for example.
So some of the other inflammatory mediators are like white willow, and wintergreen, turmeric. A lot of people are on curcumin right now.
Yes. It's it's become very well known, and many people use it. It can be taken in teas or powder or mother tincture capsules, the different kinds, and it's very effective also to fight against inflammation, mostly of the digestive tube, ulcers, gastritis, or colitis, and so forth. Or also joint problems. Basically, each plant which has an anti-inflammatory action will act everywhere in the body. But in practice, it has been observed that usually they're more effective in some organs or some parts of the body than others.
Curcumin's more for, according to this, turmeric, curcumin's more for gastritis, irritable bowel, colitis, or small bowel inflammation, arthritis, osteoarthritis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it, yeah. You just mentioned white willow, and there's also meadow sweets, which are plants which have been used for 2,000 years against inflammation. Already the Greece and antiquity had used them. And it's people are amazed when they take it in the form of an infusion that the taste is well known to them. It tastes like aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact,
right.
aspirin has been is a remedy built, produced in laboratories by copying the active substance of meadow sweets. So it's not meadow sweets which is copying the aspirin, it's the other way around. Aspirin
right.
is copying the substances in meadow sweets. And
yeah, the
and
active
white,
principle in meadow sweet is salicylic acid. So
yes,
that's,
yeah.
And I didn't know that. I learned that from your book. I had heard of meadow sweet, but I really didn't. I mean, I had always thought that white willow was more aspirin, but it looks like
both have this taste.
Both,
yeah.
So, what about wintergreen? How's that used?
Well, this this plant here is when you take the ethereal oil of wintergreen. 95% of it is methyl salicylate, which is the active substance. And that's why this etheric oil is also smells of aspirin and very strongly, because it's nearly only the active substance. It's very it's usually used externally for joint problems, tendinitis, neuritis, lumbago, and all kind of things with muscles and joints.
Yeah, you'd have
very
to
effective.
Stop it before
yeah.
surgery, right? It's
Sorry?
It's you'd have to stop wintergreen before surgery?
Yes. Well, these plants have a thinning action on the blood, like aspirin. And therefore, if someone is taking this plant before an operation, he should always tell everything to the doctor so that the doctor knows exactly and no problem will arise.
Right. Now, the antihistamine plants, there's three of those.
Yeah. Well, when an allergen comes into the body, the cells which are addressed by it will release and produce histamine. And this histamine is a pro-inflammatory mediator. And that will make, for example, if it's in the nose, flower pollen comes in the nose, it will trigger hay fever in some people. And the more the person has this reaction, allergic reaction, the more there is histamine in his blood. And therefore, the reaction is triggered by just a little bit, and it's the reaction is very strong. So there's a possibility. The three plants I talk about and in this group are plants which will lower the quantity of histamine in the blood and in the cells, which will have the effect that the person will not react so quickly and so strongly towards allergens. It's one of them, these plants, is black cumin seeds, which is very effective. And I would suggest people with allergies to take this, black cumin seeds, and also black currants buds, because together they work well, and it will help them a lot to get rid of their problems. Of course, sometimes people get rid of the problem totally and definitively, but other people stay a bit too sensitive to allergens and have to start again after a cure, a treatment, every 6 months or so, or every spring, in order to keep things into balance.
Do you know if black cumin works by stabilizing mast cells?
Stabilizing?
Mast cells, you know, so that they don't release histamine?
No, I think it won't block the production of histamine, but it lowers the amount of histamine which is around. Someone who has hay fever or an allergy has a higher level of histamine in his blood. Yeah, and it's to lower it down. Yeah.
So we've learned that our standard American diet has too many omega-6 fatty acids in it.
Yeah.
And not enough omega-3s. And what kind of problem does that set up in the body?
Well, when an inflammation is triggered, there's, as I said, there are pro-inflammatory prostaglandins which are produced.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when the goal of the reaction is reached and the microbes or the poisons are neutralized, then the cells will say to the immune system, they will send a message with anti-inflammatory prostaglandins to say, don't send any white cells anymore, lymphocytes, because it's over. You can calm down the whole thing. And the body produces itself the anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. But in order to do this, it has to have enough non-saturated fatty acids of a certain kind, which is called omega-3s. The body needs omega-3s to produce anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. So when the diet of someone doesn't contain enough of those omega-3s, the body cannot produce anti-inflammatory prostaglandins, and the inflammation has a tendency to go on, or the body has a terrain which is pro-inflammatory. It's ready to inflame at any time. It has been discovered that we should have 2 grams of omega-3 each day in our foods, but usually it's 0.2, that's not much, or 0.6, which is not much either. Well, usually it's much lower than it should. So the what's interesting now is to know where do these omega-3 come from. And they come from oils, mostly through oils. And they are oils which are not used very often, but which can be bought in any health food shop, such as perilla oil, which contains 65% of omega-3s, or flax oil, 54%, or camelina, or hemp oil, or walnut oil, canola oil, and so forth. And if people want to do something in this field, they should, when they prepare a sauce for the salad dressing, they should use these oils and not the common oils which are heated to be produced and which contain no omega-3s or very few omega-3s. These oils have a good taste, so it's no problem on at that site. Another way of getting omega-3s is to eat animals with which are a bit fish, which are a bit fatty, and such as mackerel, salmon, herring, and so forth. In the oil, in their greases, which is very liquid, we talk about oils, fish oils. These oils are very rich in omega-3s, and by eating regularly during the week these fishes instead of meat, and that's something which is encouraged in newspaper now a bit everywhere, it will help the body have enough omega-3s to produce the anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. Of course, it's also possible to buy capsules and take capsules of these fish oils.
So the fish oils really don't come from the fish, though. You say they come from the algae?
No. The fish oils come from the fish.
The omegas, the fish don't make the omegas, though. You said that comes from something inside the fish.
I don't know. No, I thought I said was that in the oil of those fishes, These fish oils are very rich in omega-3s. It's part of the oil. Yeah. So when you eat the fish, there's oil with it, and you receive omega-3s. And in fact, omega-3s has this anti-inflammatory activity. But as we have seen, it will also make the blood thinner. And that explains why Eskimos, which eat so much fat and meat, are not, survive such a diet, because they eat also a lot of fish full of omega-3s, which will thin their blood.
Right. Now, this is the line that I read. Fish do not produce omega-3s themselves, but the plankton and algae they consume do.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, it's just a minor point.
Yeah.
But
omega-3s are produced by the plants which the fish eat, but then omega-3s are in the fish oil.
Right.
Available for us. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I understand now what you mean.
A lot of the patients that I see are testing for evening primrose oil. And I understand that that's a little bit different than the other oils you've been discussing.
Yeah, it's a little, but not too different, because the body can produce omega-3s with omega-6, which is another kind of non-fatty acids. But the omega-3s are first transformed into gamma-linoleic acids, and then in omega-3s. So when someone takes those evening primrose oil, it's full of those gamma-linoleic acids, which are a precursory of omega-3. It's another way, it's taking a substance which will help the body produce omega-3s. It's not directly omega-3s, but a substance which the body will use to produce omega-3s. So it's also very effective. There's also a lot of those gamma-linoleic acids in borage oil, which is also quite common now.
Now, one of the important general principles of health is that the body needs to be more alkaline than acidic. And I know that a lot of my patients have a lot of, they have an immune deficiency, so they have a lot of mold, yeast, intracellular infections, viruses, and then a tendency toward cancer. So all of these things, I mean, you can do a lot for the patient to kill off all that stuff, either using natural things or antivirals or antifungals. But if you don't change the acid state of the body, I think these things have a tendency to grow back.
Yes, sure. Because it's the most, a notion of natural medicine is that the basic thing on which we should work is the terrain, that is the internal environment, cellular environment. Mm-hmm. All those liquids which are in the cells, around the cells, there is a certain composition which guarantees that the cells can work well and stay healthy. But this composition can be destroyed by toxins coming in the body. And we come again to the basic notion of natural medicine. We become ill because there are too many toxins in our terrain. And these toxins can be acids or not, but usually they're quite acids. And when they're there, the cells cannot defend themselves well, and it gives an environment which is very favorable for the development and multiplication of yeast and also sorts of microbes, which will hinder the work of the cells. So it's like when there's a region where there's water, stagnant water, mosquitoes will put their eggs in the water, and it will give a lot of mosquitoes. One can kill the mosquitoes in the air, but there's always eggs in the water to start again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing in the body. You can kill all the microbes, but if the internal environment is favorable, they'll start again, and it's a fight without end. Yeah,
so what are the best ways to become alkaline? We're starting our patients on something very inexpensive, $20 for an alkaline water tube that you put in distilled water to start with some alkaline water. I think that's a good place to start for most people.
Yeah, well, it's an easy start. In fact, the acids which are in the body comes from what we eat. Some foods are acidifying. That's
mm-hmm.
mostly the proteins, meat, fish, cheese, and also cereal grains, sugar, and so forth. I give
mm-hmm.
all the list in my book. And people have a tendency to eat a lot of proteins, meats, breads, pasta, and so forth, drink
right.
wine, with everything which is and a very sweet food. And that's all very acidic, and it
right.
will acidify the body. Now, the foods which are alkaline or alkalizing
mm-hmm.
are vegetables and fruits,
mm-hmm.
potatoes, almonds. So and those foods are foods which are not so much eaten by in average. I mean, not everybody eats salads or cooked vegetables
right.
or eat fruits. Therefore, there's an imbalance in what they eat. They eat more foods which brings acids than
mm-hmm.
food that which are alkaline. And that's why the terrain is then acid. So a change in diet is important. People should eat
mm-hmm.
Less meat, less or no white sugar at least, and
mm-hmm.
increase the amount of alkalizing foods, which are basically all the vegetables, raw or cooked, potatoes,
mm-hmm.
almond, and so forth. And
some people can't change their diet, though. They're maybe in an institution like a nursing home
yeah.
where the diet is what it is, or they,
yeah.
You know, are in a family where their family won't eat the healthy foods that they should, or maybe they don't cook, and so they're at the mercy of
yeah.
who's cooking. So
yeah.
we have something, and I'm sure you have something similar to this, called Buffer pH, which is
yeah.
a buffered, it's not just sodium bicarb, but it's a buffered. It has other bicarbs in it, so it doesn't give you too much sodium. And what I tell the people to do is check their urine pH, and if it's acidic, like below 7, to take 3 buffered pH either once a day or twice a day, depending on how acidic
yeah.
they are. And so that, and then what happens is if they're more alkaline, they simply don't have the problems with the yeast and mold and viruses
yeah, exactly.
and all the
yeah.
critters growing back.
Yeah, it's I do the same. If someone cannot change his diet or
mm-hmm.
the results are coming too slowly, I give them. I tell them to take some alkaline supplements, mixtures
mm-hmm.
of different minerals which are alkaline. But the way I tell them is to dose it in order to reach a urine pH of 7. So it's very different from one person
mm-hmm.
to another. They have
right.
to adapt the intake to their pH. And as you say, when they have reached the pH of 7 after a certain number of days, not too long, they will feel
mm-hmm.
less tired, more strong,
right.
stronger,
yeah.
and fight better against their illnesses and so forth. It's always so surprising how effective it is.
And it's actually critical for cancer patients because cancer grows in an acidic environment a lot quicker than it does in an alkaline environment. So for cancer patients, it's not just a good idea. It's actually absolutely necessary for them to have alkalinity.
Yeah. Yeah, and another effect of taking these alkaline supplements is that the less someone is acidic, the less the pain are strong.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, that's true.
The more acidic someone is, the stronger are the pains. So
right.
it's also worth it to act in this manner.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point. And so you actually have a book on this, right? You have a book
yes.
called The Acid Alkaline Diet for Optimal Health.
Yes. Where I explain how do people get acidic and
mm-hmm.
and what kind of food are alkaline, acidifying, and everything which is important to know to change the diet, how to take supplements, how to get rid of the
mm-hmm.
acids by with plants and sweating and so forth, so that
sure.
they can come into balance again. If people, just I allow myself to mention, I have a website where I present my different books, and there are articles on the subject and so forth for people who want to go into it to see a bit before they buy the book, for example.
Mm-hmm. And what is your website?
Well, the address is my name, ChristopherVasey.ch. ChristopherVasey.ch.
What does CH stand for?
Switzerland's Confédération Helvétique.
Okay.
Helvetic Confederation.
All right. Great. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. Is there any words of wisdom you would like to leave the listening audience with?
Yes, I would like to say it was a pleasure to be with you to talk about this subject, and that more and more people realize that nature has created, or the creator of nature has created our body. It's meant to function in a natural way. The food we eat and everything we use to help it, to nourish it or to cure it, it should be natural, or the most natural we can, in order to keep everything in balance. And it's worth it to be in good health, because when we are in good health, we are also much happier in life. And, well, that's something good to be able to live, experience.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Vasey. I really appreciate it. I thought your book was great. I'm going to recommend it to my patients who all have problems with massive inflammation, so they have a lot more choices. And I want to thank you for joining us from Switzerland.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. This is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Dr. Christopher Vasey, who wrote the book Natural Remedies for Inflammation, with a lot of great information scientifically as well as practically for what you can do to become not inflamed. You'll be a lot more comfortable, a lot less prone to disease, and learn a lot about natural detoxification and your body's ability to get rid of these toxins. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Dr. John Ryan, The Missing Pill, The Rise of Energy-Based Healing and Consciousness Biospiritual Transformation. That should be an interesting lecture. And then on the 14th, Dr. Kilmore McCauley, Pioneer of Homocysteine Theory. And then on the 21st, Dr. Meg Lossie, The Children of Now, Evolution, How Can We Support Fast Forward Evolution of Our Children and All of Humanity? And then on the 28th, Dr. Art Markman, Smart Change, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself. This has been Dr. Susan Kolb. Please join us next week. I do want to mention that Tricia McCannon is going to be presenting Noetic Science in March. That is going to be the third Thursday at the Dunwoody office. I don't have her topic right now, but she has a new book coming out on the Goddess Principle, so it may be about that. Anyway, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. Thank you for joining us on Temple of Health Radio Show.